This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Residents in the Coulee region have many options when it comes to travel, from hopping on a plane out of the La Crosse Regional Airport to taking the Empire Builder to the regional bus service between La Crosse and regional communities every day. These modes of public transportation keep people coming in and out of La Crosse each day. Today is the seventh show in our monthly series on regional infrastructure systems. Joining us to talk about the state of planes, bus services, and passenger rail in the Coulee region are Clinton Torp, Director of the La Crosse Regional Airport, Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner, and John Parkin, President of the Wisconsin Association of Railroad Passengers. And so first, I just kind of want to talk about the state of each of your kind of modes of transportation. So Clinton, if you want to start by kind of talking a little bit about, you know, what does air service in the La Crosse area kind of look like at this point?
Sure. We've had in the La Crosse area a long history of having commercial air service, and in today's environment, we actually have pretty good air service. We're always looking to improve that. There are a lot of challenges that are out there in terms of pilot shortages and aircraft shortages, and some of those things that don't allow our market to maybe get as many flights as we'd like or have had in the past. But planes are full today. If anybody that's traveled recently on air service knows that it's very seldom that you find open seats anymore, and that's just kind of the reality of today's aviation environment.
Yeah, and so, you know, who uses the La Crosse Regional Airport?
Yeah, so and we did actually a number of years ago change our name to Regional, and really that is to show that we do have a regional impact. About 45% of our passengers come from the city of La Crosse and surrounding communities, and the rest of the passengers come from outside counties. So we do see a lot of people using the airport from the 12, 13 county area. And then what a lot of people actually don't realize is that about 50% of our total traffic is actually inbound. So those are visitors coming to La Crosse, whether they're here for pleasure or for business, but those are people coming into our communities.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of right now, where do flights go to out of La Crosse and from La Crosse? You know, kind of what does that look like, I guess?
Sure, it's been pretty stable for many years, but essentially Delta to Minneapolis and American to Chicago. We are continuing to work on trying to add additional routes, so there's ongoing conversations happening there. Nothing to announce at this point, but we're definitely making those efforts.
Absolutely. And Charlie, can you talk a little bit about kind of the current state of regional bus services right now in the La Crosse area?
Sure. The current route that we have goes from Prairie du Chien and Viroqua to La Crosse and back. That's called Scenic Mississippi River Transit. And that ridership is up 60% over 2013. And if you compare those 2 years, you can also see that the price for gas for fuel is down significantly. I think it was close to $4 in 13, and now it's, you know, just above $2. So people are realizing that taking the regional transit is a really good option for them. The nice thing is the bus has free Wi-Fi, so they can actually do things in their commute rather than having to focus on driving. And it's also very stable and very safe, so it's a route that they can take in bad weather.
Yeah, and, you know, who uses the Scenic Mississippi, you know, bus service? I guess, you know, kind of who are the typical users of that bus system?
Sure. When we first started the service, we were kind of thinking it would be mostly elderly or people going to hospitals or things like that. And what we found is almost 60% of our riders are going to work. Their commuters. So, you know, on any given day, you can see a suit and tie, or you can see, you know, shorts and a tank top. So we do have bike racks on the front, so we get a lot of college-age students going to throwing the bike on and going to college and riding around campus all day.
And John, can you talk a little bit about kind of the current state of, you know, passenger rail in the Coulee region?
La Crosse is served by the Empire Builder, which is a pretty high-speed passenger train that's going both east and west. So you can board at La Crosse. You can travel east through several Wisconsin cities, stopping at Milwaukee or Chicago if you're on a business in a larger city. Or you can go north and west. It hits the Twin Cities and splits at Spokane and goes to Seattle and Portland. So we have very strong rail passenger service. The Empire Builder that runs through here for years has been the highest used of the trains within the United States in person miles per train mile. So it's sometimes booked, but you have to book ahead. Prices are very reasonable on it, and of course it's an environmental choice for many people because fuel consumption to move a person is much less than air or by car. So one train each day each way right now, the state of Wisconsin, La Crosse County, frankly, Amtrak and the state of Illinois are working on a second train a day, and Minnesota's been in and out of the project. Right now they're not a contributor, but we're hoping next year they will. And that will allow excellent business travel up and back or down to Milwaukee or Chicago and back in the same day for people who have business meetings.
I definitely want to return to the efforts you're talking about, John, but I wonder if we, if you have a sense of how many people in our area are using the Empire Builder.
I should know that number. I have to confess, we're the after the Milwaukee and Milwaukee Airport, we're the second heaviest traveled in Wisconsin, and I don't know if it's 20,000 or 50,000, but it's a heavy usage station. And there are a lot of people, of course, you'll often see people such as Amish who don't use motor vehicles taking the train in and out of La Crosse. So it's got a very dedicated, very heavy ridership.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of rail, air, and bus service in southwestern Wisconsin. We're here with John Parkin, president of the Wisconsin Association of Railroad Passengers, Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner, and Clinton Torp, director of the La Crosse Regional Airport. And John, you know, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about maybe unique challenges to, you know, to passenger rail service in the La Crosse area or kind of, you know, western Wisconsin versus, you know, looking at passenger rail in a larger city.
Well, basically, remember Amtrak is funded in a federal budget status nationally. So of course, right now we're going through the political era where the president's budget put more funding into the Northeast Corridor, which is the New England states, and suggested canceling the long-distance trains like the one through here. The Republican caucus in the House of Representatives put the long-distance trains back in, so we're pretty confident that it will survive as is. The issue then becomes getting more frequent service. And as I said, we have a cooperative effort, and it's amazing that the only county identified in the situation is aiding it is La Crosse County. So there's not a Minnesota county in there at county level or in Illinois. So we have quite a leadership role in rail passenger. The Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, which we're supporting, would put six trains a day each way through La Crosse at 110 miles an hour. So we've cut travel time down significantly.
Yeah, and Clinton, I wonder if there are specific or unique challenges to, you know, air service out of the La Crosse area or out of maybe a more rural area versus out of Minneapolis, say.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the reasons people take air services for convenience and time. I mean, that's really what we're selling is time. With the regional airports like La Crosse, one of the challenges is because we're adding an additional hop on an airline, right, because you have to get to a hub to move on to your final destination, there is an additional cost to that for an airline to operate it. And being for-profit companies, obviously they're going to recoup that cost plus some revenue. So the biggest challenge we really have is getting people to support using the local airport. We do have pretty robust usage by our business communities. They're willing to, you know, spend a little more for the time savings of being able to get into the national transportation system. But on the leisure side, we do run into issues. About three out of every four passengers in our region that that use the commercial air transportation system use an alternate airport, primarily being Minneapolis. So that's really a big challenge, trying to bring those folks into using the airport, because we could grow the airport much larger than it is today and provide those additional hubs and additional flight frequency, but it's kind of a chicken or egg, you know, trying to get them to use the airport so that we can grow them, because they're, again, the airlines being for profit, they're not going to take that risk unless they have that that business core there.
Absolutely. Yeah, and Charlie, I wonder, you know, what your thoughts are on maybe unique challenges to the regional bus service in the La Crosse area versus, you know, a bus service in a larger city or around a larger community.
I think because it's a regional bus service, so it goes all the way, you know, it's right now it's serving three counties. It's fairly unique, and what we found is there's not a lot of bus services like it. Some of the larger urban areas, they have light rail or other forms of transportation that could work where we don't have any of that. So we actually have a bit of a demand for that regional bus service, and we're hoping to expand the service to two other counties, Monroe and Trempealeau counties, in the near future. But the challenges here really are that the infrastructure in La Crosse is really built for single-occupancy vehicles. We have a ton of parking spaces. We have a need for more parking spaces because the culture is let's drive in, and just it's very convenient, it's easy, and it's a good choice. Unfortunately, it's the most expensive choice for taxpayers.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about, you know, maybe how these regional bus services could maybe help some of these parking problems we see downtown and other issues we see in the community?
Well, certainly. I mean, if it's a 26-passenger bus that's never parking anywhere, potentially that could take, you know, 15 to 20 cars out of parking spaces that could be used by somebody else. So, and if you've ever looked at the data, building 15 to 20 parking spaces in the city of La Crosse is very expensive. So it's, you know, typically it's money well spent. They are buses that use the current pavement. But again, if you're taking 15 to 20 cars off of the roads and just having one bus, that's a significant reduction in damage to the roads. So we think it's a good option. It's a good alternative. We're trying to keep it inexpensive so people like that choice and will choose it. But there's a lot of other things we need to do to reduce those single occupancy vehicle miles.
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, increasing bus services around the La Crosse area would take cars off the road. And I wonder if that's becoming more of an attractive, I guess, feature of bus services, given the state of the current transportation budget and a lot of the arguments we see on a state level when it comes to funding for roads.
I hope so. It's always a difficult policy debate for our leaders. Many of those leaders haven't ever taken public transit, and so they don't see the value of it. But if we can provide that data, if we can continue to let them know that this is a good choice, I think it's something that should be a pretty easy decision for them. A lot of people don't even think about the amount of public subsidy there is for roads, and the fact that cars are driving on those roads about 10% of the time, so about 90% of the time the roads are vacant. They look at a bus, and if there's five passengers on a 26-passenger bus, they see a fairly vacant bus. But they never look at the road and see how vacant it is. So, you know, it's a significant investment either way for public transit and for roads, and it's a difficult decision. But hopefully the data shows that it's a good policy decision to do public transit.
You know, we're talking about some of these, you know, challenges that are maybe facing regional bus service right now and ways that it could help the community. But, you know, Clinton, I wonder if you could talk about some challenges that are facing regional airline services right now. I know earlier you mentioned the issue of a shortage of pilots. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how we kind of ended up in this, you know, it's a national situation that's, you know, really impacting us here in La Crosse?
Sure, absolutely. We're in a unique position where airlines are actually making a lot of money right now, and we would probably see additional service throughout the nation if it wasn't for some of these challenges. And really, you hit that on the head, is the pilot shortage is really the primary issue that we're facing right now. The issue didn't happen overnight. It's been an ongoing issue that we've seen coming, but it's been exaggerated by a couple of issues. A number of years ago, there was a regional jet crash out in New York, and that subsequently led to some knee-jerk legislation, which drastically increased the amount of pilot training hours that are required for someone to go from wanting to be a pilot to actually sitting in the right seat of a commercial aircraft. That went from 250 hours to 1,500 hours. And that's really been the single-handedly largest thing that has caused this pilot shortage to really compound. So there's a lot of talk right now in the Hill and within the industry about how, without jeopardizing safety, which obviously no one wants to do, how can we reduce those hour requirements but still provide that high level of training? And there's a lot of great ideas that are being floated around right now. The military is also having issues filling their pilot ranks. So, I mean, that used to be kind of a feed into the commercial aviation sector. So there's a number of issues there that are running concurrently, resulting in the shortage.
Whose job is it to recruit pilots? You know, like, I imagine that a lot of that burden falls on airlines, but, you know, I wonder if it's really the, you know, regional airport services that kind of suffer at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely the regional airports suffer, as well as the people that live in smaller communities, and that's really a major issue. I mean, at what point do we all have to drive 3 to 4 hours to get into their transportation system? But as far as who's responsible for training those or bringing those people into the pilot career field, that's also another interesting issue. I mean, it used to be there were enough people interested in flying that it just kind of filled the ranks in that manner. But it's very expensive to become a pilot now. I mean, you're talking over $100,000 just in flight training costs to become an airline pilot. Wages had been depressed for many years after September 11th, and that also confounded the issue. The wages have come up quite a bit now, so we're seeing more people interested. But on the local level, even airports like La Crosse are trying to get out into the school districts and create programs to try to encourage kids to look at aviation as a career field. So, I mean, that's what we're doing kind of on the grassroots effort.
I wonder if trends in the popularity of recreational flying and that sort of thing, if that's impacting also kind of the number of people we see, pursuing pilot as a career.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a national trend. I mean, if you look at La Crosse alone, in the last 30 years, we've gone from about 100,000 operations at the airport. So that's someone either landing or taking off, to around 20,000. And that is direct relationship with the age of pilots and how much people are flying. It's an expensive hobby. And because less people are involved in it, there's less youth interaction, and that just continues to compound. Here in La Crosse too, I mean, if you were to gauge the average age of a pilot based at the airport, it's probably well over 60 years old. So getting the youth back and involved in aviation, involved with, you know, our space programs and some of those things that really keep our industry moving is really critical.
That's Clinton Torp, director of the La Crosse Regional Airport, here with us today for the 7th show in our monthly series on infrastructure. Also joining us is Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner, and John Parkin, president of the Wisconsin Association of Railroad Passengers. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And John, you know, earlier you mentioned, some of the funding challenges that we're kind of seeing coming up or in the background right now when it comes to rail service. But, you know, I wonder if you can talk about, is rail still a popular way to travel? You know, are we still seeing, I guess, this popularity when it comes to railroad service?
Yeah, it's, of course, growing rather dramatically. Both long distance and shorter distance. And our system in the United States is unique because we use our freight rail and passenger rail, a common infrastructure. So what you have is a lower per increment cost than you would have with, say, some of the European systems that may actually run faster but require rather heavy public subsidies. And the interesting thing when you compare is, I can remember, of course, our family didn't have a car, so we rode the La Crosse City bus system for everything back when it, you know, it was still a private company and people expected to contribute more. But once you get into a mode like with Amtrak, where it requires federal cash input as well as user fees, it makes it a little more tenuous. But in this country, we're almost fully user-funded. I think the last couple of years, we've hit 92% of the operating costs, operating and maintenance, are covered by the users. So that makes a good argument when Congress is looking where value added, you know, sharing costs of infrastructure between private and federal funding. A lot of the use in Amtrak now is what's called corridor service. I'm not talking New England. I'm talking places like Milwaukee, Chicago. And at one point, our governor, former Governor Thompson, was chairman of Amtrak. And right now, the current governor is looking at moving the frequency between Chicago and Milwaukee from 8 trains a day to 10. So it carries a lot of people longer distances than we used to think of as commuting. You were hearing the person from the buses talk. The commuter traffic between Chicago and Milwaukee on a daily basis on Amtrak is very heavy. It started at 100-some thousand persons a year before Governor Thompson's build-up, and it's like 850,000 persons a year right now, and we'll probably hit 1 million in 2 years. It's one of the busiest corridors in the country. So you have the corridors, you have the Northeast Corridor with its high-speed trains, and then you have the national links that are useful for business because, of course, you can work on the train. There aren't, you know, shutting off of equipment as you have to do on an airline. And obviously you can't be working when you're driving a car. So it's an alternative that keeps growing in use and fortunately going down in some of the federal subsidy numbers, which have made it less of a target.
You've mentioned that rail service as, as kind of an option for business travelers so that they can get work done while they're traveling. But I wonder in what ways rail has maybe started to brand itself as a scenic way to travel, maybe more about the journey, less about the destination sort of situation. Do you think we're seeing that in Wisconsin?
We see it in Wisconsin, but remember, historically, income to railroads was greater from passenger service than freight. And, of course, in those days, rail was largely scenic. If you go back and you look at the history museums and the advertisements, it was See America by Rail. And so you're right. There's still an element in the long-distance trains where people are traveling and they do want to see the country in a way that you're kind of restricted when you're driving because you have to pay attention to what you're doing. And, of course, when you're flying, you're up above the scenery. So that will always be an element. So I dare say this shift has been gradually but slowly more and more to business travel.
John Parkin, president of the Wisconsin Association of Railroad Passengers, is here with us today to talk about the current and future needs of regional passenger trains, airports, and bus services. He's joined by Clinton Torp, director of the La Crosse Regional Airport, and Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on regional public transportation infrastructure. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on infrastructure systems in our region. La Crosse is a hub for air travel, Amtrak trains, and regional bus services. As these systems look to the future and compete for federal funding, planes, trains, and buses continue to promote their service as a viable mode of transportation. Joining us to talk about the current state of these important infrastructure systems and what we need to maintain them for the future are Clinton Torp, director of the La Crosse Regional Airport, Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner, and John Parkin, president of the Wisconsin Association of Railroad Passengers. And so I want to start this second half by talking about kind of investments for expanding these services in the future. And Charlie, I know that you've been kind of part of an effort to expand regional bus services in the La Crosse area. And you mentioned earlier to two new counties. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what that bus service would look like?
Sure. We've seen such success going south, and all of our surveys are either very satisfied or satisfied, which as a public servant, I never see 100% satisfied. So although it's a self-selection, those are people using the service, to get everybody to say that they're satisfied is unbelievable. So our thought was, is can we provide the service to more people? So we've done a feasibility study to expand the service going from La Crosse to Toma and to Arcadia, and then also back from those locations. In that feasibility study, we were very conservative in our data analysis, and it shows that there is probable ridership to make especially the Toma route very feasible. The Arcadia route is very dependent upon employees at one or two businesses in Arcadia, but the Toma route is much more diverse. And so our plan is to apply for funding to expand that service to Toma. And what that would look like is it would go down the I-90 corridor, stop at a couple of like Park and Ride in West Salem, things like that, go through Sparta and then into Toma and around through the industrial park, the VA, and back through downtown. Our attempt would be to make sure that those routes are nothing more than an hour. Our typical riders wouldn't stay if it was more than an hour. And also they're fixed route, and they would be focused on shift times when the workers are getting out of work or going into work. So it could be a very stable way for those employees to get to work and back. We've done a survey of employers, and they're very positive about this potential. And so we may even start that service in August or September of 2017 to try to work out the kinks for a 2018 rollout.
Why Toma? Why that particular location? I guess what was the draw that you felt that there would be a consistent ridership?
Well, I think culturally, there is a lot of people that commute back and forth between La Crosse and Toma, and it's something that we've seen kind of just in passing, but when we did the study, when we analyzed the data, it confirmed it, it proved it. So we've seen a demand from the Transportation Coordinating Committee of Monroe County, and they've, you know, been very supportive of our efforts. And then we also have a lot of larger businesses like Toro, Toma Memorial Hospital, and especially the Veterans Administration that are interested in the service for not only residents but also employees. So that's where really it directed us to potentially provide this service.
And can you talk about, you know, why service to Arcadia is also something that you guys are looking at?
Well, in our discussions with those large employers, there's a shortage in Arcadia of housing. And so there seems to be an employee base with good housing along that route going south. So it seems from the data that could work if the employer was supportive of that. So we're still working on that issue, and we'll keep moving forward.
You know, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what are the benefits to having a bus service, you know, from La Crosse to these communities, both for the you know, rural communities along the routes, but also for La Crosse? You know, what do each kind of side of the you know, bus service get?
Sure. Well, it's a service for the riders, for them to have stable transportation, it makes their cost of living more affordable. If they don't have to have that second or third car, if they don't have to have that additional car insurance and the maintenance costs, et cetera, it's a nice stable option for transportation, especially if it's for commuting. For the public, if we're taking that many vehicles off the road, it saves some tax dollars. And probably more so than anything, it's that parking issue. So if you're looking at it from the benefit of the side of the urban area of La Crosse, parking is a big deal. And so that investment in parking, or the savings, if you will, is a good deal for the taxpayers in the La Crosse area. But I think also there's the kind of the education factor. If we can get people to see that public transit is a benefit and is a positive for their lives, we can be more efficient in serving the public, not only in the regional transportation, but in local transit, in air, in freight. As you've heard from the other speakers today, typically these services are much less expensive from a taxpayer standpoint than serving a single occupancy vehicle.
What do we need to get these services off the ground? You know, you mentioned that you guys are looking to get started relatively quickly with, you know, the service to Tomah. But, you know, what does La Crosse County need to, you know, put these bus routes into operation?
Well, we've kind of built the model with the Smart Bus as it is. And if we can expand that model, we will be applying for grants from the Department of Transportation, federal grants, but we'll also be looking for some local funding. And so what we really need is for local units of government, local businesses to have that policy debate, to consider it. And if they're interested in the program, contact us. We'll try to get them information so they can make a good decision.
Continuing to talk about, you know, kind of local efforts to expand services in our area, you know, Clinton, I wonder if you can talk about, you know, the LSE Leaders Program and how, you know, the La Crosse Regional Airport is working to, you know, expand service in our area.
Sure. So the airport is obviously part of the community. It's owned by the community. So one of the things that we've really been pushing is community integration. So we're really dependent on the businesses and the residents of our area to use the airport to keep it sustainable, just like buses or trains. So the LSE Leaders Program is really a community partnership with key local businesses to try to get them to modify their travel policies to consider flying La Crosse first before they look at alternative airports in support of their airport. So we've been relatively successful at the program so far. As of today, we have 27 businesses that have signed up into the program, and we're continuing to have discussions with other businesses, and we look forward to growing that and hopefully turning that into additional air service, which is really the ultimate goal.
Yeah, can you talk about, you know, what companies have really signed on to this effort?
Yeah, so both of the major hospital systems, Gunderson and Mayo here in La Crosse, Altra Federal Credit Union has joined up, and Quick Trip is also joining, so some of the larger organizations.
I know you've kind of hit on this before, but, you know, can I talk about why quantifying, you know, I guess the support in the La Crosse area for the airport is really important in this kind of the current state of things in air service?
Sure. So one of my primary jobs is to go out and meet with airlines and talk about air service. And anytime you have a meeting with an airline planner, the first thing they're going to ask you is, what's your level of business support? Because that's really key to their support of a community in terms of number of airplanes that they're putting into that community. So what this program is going to allow us to do is to quantitatively show the airlines that we have the support of the local business communities, and be able to put some statistics and data behind those pledges, and be able to use that to show that La Crosse community is a better community than, say, another community somewhere in the nation that they're also considering. So we're really competing with airports throughout the country for limited airline resources.
And, you know, I wonder if there are other airports in our state that are, or in our region, that are maybe starting to do similar things, you know, and if you can maybe talk about those and what you're kind of seeing.
Yeah, definitely. As we've brought this program on, we've had questions from other airports. Within the airport industry, it's kind of interesting because we're all competitors, but we're frenemies, I guess. So we do share a lot of ideas on how to best go about these things. So we're definitely seeing more interest from other airports throughout the country in doing this. And there are several airports that I guess you would consider early adopters and have been successful with these programs.
Earlier in the program, you mentioned that, you know, there are no kind of hard and fast timelines to these efforts. But, you know, I wonder if you have a sense of, I guess, what are the pieces that need to fall in place for us to maybe see some greater air service, whether that's, you know, new destinations or more planes or whatever that might be.
Sure. So this is really a multi-year process. We did actually acquire a grant a number of years ago for providing a risk mitigation for new service. Unfortunately, it was right about the time of some mergers that put some plans on hold, but we're continuing to have those discussions. But really to continue the growth, the first thing that we needed to do was fill the planes that we have now to a level that caught the attention of the airlines. As of the last 6 to 12 months, we've kind of reached that milestone. The last several months, we've had an average of 90% load factors on our airplanes. That means 90% of every seat has been full. That gets the attention of airlines. So that was really a real key milestone for this discussion. Now that we've had that, we're having some more in-depth discussions with our various airline partners on how additional capacity could succeed in our area.
That's Clinton Torp, director of the La Crosse Regional Airport, here with us today for the 7th show in our monthly series on infrastructure. Also joining us is Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner, and John Parkin, president of the Wisconsin Association of Railroad Passengers. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And we've been talking about some, local efforts to kind of expand transportation services in our area. And John, I wonder if you can talk about, something you touched on earlier, which is this effort to expand Amtrak services in our community.
Yeah, at this particular point, for some reason, unbeknownst to some of us, they decided to run an environmental impact statement on the second train. So we're in the process of having that done. That's the second train between the Twin Cities via Wisconsin, via La Crosse and Milwaukee, and ending in Chicago. So the goal, again, is to reach 6 trains a day each way, but this would be the first step to add the second one. There's a probability from the original studies that there would not be an operating subsidy required on this one, even though you always hear efforts to claim that there would be. What I think will be involved is a cost will be the capital improvements that the railroad wants to do. The entire Amtrak system was tied to the idea that you would keep incremental capability of the railroads to carry freight and passenger. And as you begin to enlarge those uses, you'd have public-private partnerships to build such simple things, but expensive, as more passing tracks or another crossover. So the initial interaction with the railroad and the railroad that serves Amtrak through here has got the highest on-time performance in the U.S. For its passenger service. It runs the trains between Chicago and Milwaukee. They have the highest on-time performance anywhere. And then, of course, once it receives trains from Burlington and the Twin Cities, it doesn't lose any time getting them to Chicago. And that railroad wants to stay efficient for its freight use. And so the state is negotiating with them, all three states, as to what capacity builds might be required at a second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth train. You know, at which level do you do each? So what we're facing here is not so much an operating subsidy as an agreement on what capital needs are supplied and remember, this will also help freight transportation in and out of our area. And, of course, shipping freight by rail is about the cheapest way to ship it. So that makes for a stronger business support for places like La Crosse that have manufacturing. And years ago, shipped more by rail, and a lot of it just had to be put on competing forms because of limits on rail. So it's sort of a joint effort to build both passenger capability in the La Crosse and area and even more heavy freight rail into La Crosse.
I kind of want to take a step back, and I wonder if you can talk about when efforts to expand the number of, you know, passenger trains coming through La Crosse got started, and kind of who are the players in that effort?
Well, initially in the late 1990s, the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative was formed, and Wisconsin for many years has been one of the leaders. So the initial upbuild between the Twin Cities and Chicago, a former president many years ago cut Amtrak way down, and it would probably surprise you which president, which party, but that's neither here nor there. So it started with a restructuring where the initial Chicago-Milwaukee service was upgraded under Governor Thompson, who ironically was the other party. And so then the other thing that was cut with that previous president was the second train to the West Coast through here. So in a sense, we're just working with this for the last step of restoration of those cuts that occurred back in the 1970s. Now, the state of Wisconsin, state of Minnesota, state of Illinois all play varying roles, but those are the key players. The only particularly prominent county in this has been La Crosse County, Wisconsin. The state at this point is supportive of the studies on the second train and is actively pursuing the two additional trains between Chicago and Milwaukee. So that's your Wisconsin player, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And in Minnesota, there's been a lot of effort at state level to get the second train, which has sort of reached an impasse right now because there's some in-state fighting over where transportation money should go. So they're less active than Wisconsin and Illinois at this particular point. But these things have come and gone over the last 20 years, and progress has just continued forward. So what will help, I think, is if more counties within Wisconsin and Minnesota will act like La Crosse, you know, and get a local involvement, because that gets people contacting their representatives. And if you ever go and read the original analysis, the Twin Cities, La Crosse, Milwaukee, Chicago, high-speed rail always broke even and made a net profit margin in O&M. So this is a good one to be the development, because once the capital expense is putting in, it will be very self-sustaining. And so all those parties have to agree. And then the other player, of course, is always the railroad, which has also been very supportive. And Amtrak nationally, who gets requests, as your airline person was telling, or your airport person, from a lot of competing places, geography, who want more rail service too.
I know that you mentioned that Wisconsin, you know, has been kind of helping to lead this effort. But, you know, I know that there have been some other issues when it comes to rail in Wisconsin, particularly in 2010 when, you know, Governor Walker rejected federal funding for high-speed rail between Milwaukee and Madison. You know, I wonder if that has, do you see that that has impacted the tone when it comes to rail investments in our state?
Yeah, it definitely did. I've seen cyclic over the years. The governor before Thompson actually had a Secretary of Transportation who was very anti-Amtrak. Then along came Thompson, who knew very little about it, but it caught his attention. He had meetings with some of us, and he became a proponent, and then his secretaries of transportation led the Midwest Coalition. So our staff was the leader of the 10-state group. Then when Governor Thompson was done and Governor Doyle came in, initially at a meeting of ours, we were told that rail was not a particularly high priority. But when he appointed, ironically, a trucking union officer from Milwaukee to be Secretary of Transportation, he became a very strong supporter. So through both those administrations, and they were multiple-term governors, Wisconsin was the leader. But in each case, it had to start over each time there was an election. And so when the current governor came in, the big battle was whether or not to accept $800 and some million that the federal government was going to give us without a match to put high-speed rail service into Madison. And the governor rejected that, which, of course, all of us, in my way of thinking, opposed as strongly as we could. So once that was beyond, then we got into issues about manufacturing equipment in Wisconsin, which he was not supportive of. That had started during the Doyle administration. But so far as you work with whoever's in there and you make your case, and in all three cases, we had some work to do, and we obviously have not been equally successful in each of the three cases, but we've found right now that the governor has to say has been actively supporting, at least in the presentations to us, the upgrade in service between Milwaukee and Chicago. And Wisconsin has funded its share at this point of the second train study. So each time you change leadership, almost in a sense, regardless of party, because rail passengers is such a little attention getter. You know, it doesn't spend a lot of public money, and it's not high in public interest, say, to the level of education or highways. We start over, but we're very tenacious.
We've been talking a lot about kind of what the future of these services look like. And, you know, each of these kind of have a multi-approach to funding, you know, whether that's local funding, federal, state, that sort of thing. Clinton, I wonder if you can talk about, you know, as competition for transportation funding becomes tighter, you know, what you'll be looking at when it comes to, you know, making sure La Crosse Regional Airport has the funding it needs to grow.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, in terms of operations and capital outlays, actually, the La Crosse Airport does very well. We are self-sustaining, so we generate all of our own revenues to cover our expenses. So there are no local taxpayer dollars that go into the operation of the airport. And on the federal side, the funding's been stable, which is okay. The problem that we're seeing is that, obviously, as the cost of things gets higher, and funding stays level, we're able to do less with that funding. So we are seeing more competition on the federal level for funds to replace runways and build terminals and those types of things. So in response, what's happened with the grant programs is they've become more restrictive. So some of the things that you used to be able to do with grant funds are now not able to be done, and then that gets that cost burden gets shifted to the local entity, the airport itself. What will happen over time is if nothing gives, is that the length of rebuilds for runways, for example, will get extended out, and you'll start to see the same infrastructure problems that we have with roads at airports. Fortunately, with the current administration, there's been kind of a relook at airport infrastructure funding. We don't know what that's going to look like yet, but it's something that we're definitely watching very closely.
And Charlie, very briefly, you know, what are you paying attention to as we kind of look to these future growth efforts, you know, when it comes to funding?
Well, we're just trying to give the policymakers enough information so that they, you know, they can see that these investments are, like you say, there's multiple investments here. There's the private companies that are sponsoring us. There's the local municipalities that are sponsoring, and then there's those state and federal dollars. So it's really important for us to do a good job of making those applications and getting the information to them. And just if it is a good program, we should get funded. So we'll just, you know, we'll keep trying to improve the service, keep trying to make sure that our users are happy with it, and that our supporters are happy with their support and with what they get out of it. So it's really just a matter of us doing a good quality project.
We've been talking with Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner, Clinton Torp, Director of the La Crosse Regional Airport, and John Parkin, President of the Wisconsin Association of Railroad Passengers, about air travel, passenger rail, and regional bus services in southwestern Wisconsin. Today is the seventh show in our monthly series on the state of regional infrastructure. Each month, we hope to explore challenges and issues facing a different public system in western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.